Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. I'm glad you're with us this morning. And we have the very latest from Ukraine. And at this hour, the Ukrainian flag is still flying over the capital city of Kyiv. There has been small arms fire reported this morning. It was a very violent night with Russian airstrikes many areas of the country, including the capital city. But as of this morning, Ukraine is still in the hands of the Ukrainians. The Russians have not succeeded as of day three. Now, President Zelensky has been offered a safe place by the U.S. and allies, but his response, quote, "I need ammunition. I don't need a ride." He is staying in the capital city. His ministers are staying. He has been seen in several different locations outside around the capital city in social media posts as he encourages his troops and his citizens to continue to resist the Russian invasion. Reports are that Russia has fired 200-plus missiles, so far hitting one apartment building. At least one orphanage was hit. No major reports of injuries at either location as of now. No mass casualties have been reported around Ukraine, but again, that is as of now. The Russian troops pressed toward the capital this morning after they pressed overnight. It was explosions and street fighting. President Zelensky again saying, quote, "The fight is here." It's not immediately clear how far Russian troops have advanced. Ukrainian officials are reporting some success in fending off the assaults, but the fighting has persisted. Now, skirmishes have also been reported on the edge of the city and suggested that small Russian units were probing Ukrainian defenses to clear a path for the main forces. The White House has requested $6.4 billion from the Congress to aid Ukraine. Unfortunately, that was not done a little bit sooner. Now, there have been questions raised and concerns about the sanctions that have been imposed, the timing of the sanctions. Should they have been imposed sooner? A lot of questions swirling around about that. Comment on that now from President Biden.
No one expected the sanctions to prevent anything from happening. It has to show, this is going to take time, and we have to show resolve so he knows what's coming. And so the people of Russia know what he's brought on them. That's what this is all about. This is going to take time. It's not going to occur. He's going to say, oh, my God, these sanctions are coming.
And the real eyebrow raiser there was the whole notion of it's going to take time. And there was another comment from President Biden that also drew some eyebrows.
Specifically, with the sanctions we've imposed exceed SWIFT. The sanctions we imposed exceed anything that's ever been done. The sanctions we imposed have generated two-thirds of the world joining us. They are profound sanctions. Let's have a conversation in another month or so to see if they're working.
Let's have a conversation in a month or so to see if they're working. For the president to say that as the bombs are being dropped on the capital city of Ukraine certainly caused a lot of consternation among a lot of people in this country, including a number of Republicans, and including Peter Ducey, who is the White House correspondent for Fox. This is a back and forth he had with Jen Psaki at the White House yesterday.
Okay, there's a report in the New York Times that you guys kept asking China to help you stop Russia from invading Ukraine, and they didn't. So what have you guys done throughout this slow-moving Russia crisis that has worked?
In what capacity?
Well, the president talked to Putin, he talked to the G7, he threatened sanctions, he put sanctions in place. Now he says the sanctions are going to take 30 days. or about a month. Do you guys think the people in Ukraine have about a month?
Well, Peter, let me just take a step back and explain to everyone how diplomacy works and how our approach from the United States has worked. What the president has done is he has built a global coalition to stand up in the face of President Putin and President Putin's aggression and invasion of Ukraine. What he has done is he has rallied the world, our European partners, even at cost to them in some capacities, to put in place significant sanctions, historic sanctions that would have a enormous impact on the Russian financial sector. It is President Putin's choice to go to war and invade Ukraine. That is what he has done. It is our choice and our responsibility and the role of the President and the United States to rally opposition and make sure they feel significant pain from that choice. That's exactly what we have done.
Well, we're not seeing that slowing the Russians down at all as of this morning. Now, Republicans have been offering their suggestions and their criticisms. Two of my favorite Republicans are Senator John Kennedy of Mississippi and Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. And Senator Tom Cotton yesterday really kind of hit the nail on the head.
Joe Biden and NATO leaders need to quit pussyfooting around. You've got moms and dads in Ukraine who are making Molotov cocktails to protect their homes and to protect their kids from Russian soldiers. And Joe Biden and NATO leaders are patting themselves on the back for how many Zoom calls they're having. Those sanctions that we announced yesterday were wholly inadequate, not even a half measure. If you want to put real consequences on Vladimir Putin, you want to make him think twice, we need to sanction his oil and gas exports. I know that Russia has got a lot of leverage over European countries. Well, it's time for those European countries to recognize the mistakes they've made. They can seek help from the United States. We can export liquefied natural gas to them. Mm-hmm. Our partners in places like Australia and Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Qatar can do the same. And we have to start improving our own oil and gas production here at home. Joe Biden needs to completely reverse his energy policy. President Biden needs to reverse his ban on drilling on federal lands. He needs to start certifying pipelines again so we can get oil and gas flowing again in America. These are the kind of steps that we need to take that are full measures, that recognize the full gravity of this moment, as opposed to the half measures that we've heard this week from President Biden and NATO.
Senator Mitch McConnell was also asked about the situation and his suggestions.
What additionally could we do over and above ratcheting up the sanctions as far as possible? Assuming there's an insurgency in Ukraine that's willing to fight, we need to give them the tools to fight with. We need to do everything we can to make this Russian incursion painful on the Russians who are engaged in it. I'm hopeful that's the path the president will take.
It is 6:16. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. And, of course, we're going to talk a lot more about this with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. A lot of questions have been raised over the past several days. Did the Russians underestimate the Ukrainians? Why is it going so slowly for the Russians? They've even launched an amphibious attack by Russian Marines. There were reports that two Russian aircraft were shot down, large transport aircraft that had paratroopers aboard. And all this is not going well for the Russian military at this point. As an example of how Vladimir Putin plays the game, we've seen images of mobile crematoriums that the Russians have brought to Ukraine. And the reason they would use those mobile crematoriums is so that they would not transport the bodies of fallen Russian soldiers back to Moscow or elsewhere in Russia. Vladimir Putin does not want the images of coffins coming back to Russia. To solve his problem, mobile crematoriums have been brought to Ukraine by the Russian military. 6:18 now, Saturday morning update, and we will head to the WMAL Traffic and Weather. Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Good morning. Around the Beltway, all lanes are clear, both in Virginia and in Maryland, inner loop and outer loop. In Maryland on 270, local lanes northbound in Rockville, all lanes are blocked right now for a police investigation at West Montgomery Avenue. There is construction on 66 eastbound in Manassas. Roadway is down to one lane between Sudley Road and the car rest area. And on the westbound side of 66 in Centerville, there's only one lane getting by between Fairfax County Parkway and 28. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A cool start to your weekend. Clouds this morning should give way to some sunshine. Temperatures will only work their way in the low to mid-40s, so definitely a cooler than average day. Average this time of year is about 51. Overnight, our winds will go southerly, so that tomorrow temperatures will rebound back into the mid-50s, so a nice, pleasant end of the weekend with milder conditions and good sunshine. Another push of some cooler air takes us back into the lower 40s as we kickstart the new work week. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 30 degrees in the nation's capital, 619 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are looking at the various angles this morning of the Russian assault on Ukraine and a lot of questions about NATO, NATO's role. And, of course, Ukraine is not a member of the NATO alliance. So NATO is doing what it can to assist Ukraine from somewhat of a distance, but they're not getting into the fray at this point. They are preparing in case Vladimir Putin were to extend his reach or at least attempt to extend his reach beyond Ukraine. So NATO has taken these actions. Here's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
We are deploying elements of the NATO response force on land, at sea, and in the air. The United States, Canada, and European allies have deployed thousands of more troops to the eastern part of the alliance. We have over 100 jets at high alert operating in over 30 different locations. And over 120 ships from the high north to the Mediterranean, including three strike carrier groups.
Jens Stoltenberg, and this is the first mobilization of the NATO response team in history. That shows you how seriously they are taking this. Now, you're hearing a lot about the resolve of the Ukrainian people. You've also seen the game of hardball that Vladimir Putin plays. There are some very courageous members of the Ukrainian parliament. You may have seen them on some of the cable news channels this week. One of them is Sviatoslav Yorosh. He's a member of the Ukraine parliament. He's 26 years old. Now, he was speaking to the BBC on Friday. He was asked what Ukrainians would do if Putin wins the battle. He said, quote, "That's exactly why I'm looking at my AK-47 in front of me." 26-year-old member of parliament. Now, he was speaking also yesterday on the Fox News channel. And here's kind of how he sums up the resolve of the Ukrainian people.
Well, I'm joining in with the people who are resisting the Russian invasion. We have been for the whole day arming people, trying to get them organized and ready. And we actually fought battles in north of Kyiv, Russian airborne. We can confirm exactly whether it's airborne or people coming in across the border. But they were entering north of Kyiv, and there was full-on battle where Russian forces were smashed, but there are still reports of Russian columns in north of Kyiv and in the east of Kyiv, and we will protect our city. We will battle to the end to keep our capital away from Russian hands, and we are not going to withdraw, not for this weekend, not for next one, not for any weekends coming after that. We are here in our homes fighting to the last man to keep it Ukrainian.
Very, very brave member of parliament standing firm.
We have been holding on for the last 2 days in all directions, again, pushing back at the Russian gains. We have gotten prisoners aplenty. We have destroyed much of their weaponry. Again, we thank all the support that we got from the United States in terms of Javelin missiles and any weaponry. Of course, nothing is enough in this kind of fight with one of the biggest armies of the world. But again, we will face whatever odds Russia throws at us, because we are fighting for our homeland, and we shall not give in to Putin's ambition to destroy us whole.
And I think that gives you some sense of the resolve of the Ukrainian people. Now, there have been a lot of questions about sanctions. Were they a deterrent? Are they not supposed to be a deterrent? Are they supposed to be a deterrent? And we've gotten a lot in the past year, conflicting messaging coming out of the administration. Now, yesterday, and I think you heard it earlier in the program, you heard President Biden, and we'll just play a short clip from this once again, about sanctions. And he says sanctions never meant to deter anything. This is what the president said yesterday.
No one expected the sanctions to prevent anything from happening.
Well, apparently Kamala Harris, the vice president, expected sanctions to be a deterrent.
The purpose of the sanctions has always been and continues to be deterrence.
Earlier, the sanctions were going to be deterrence. Now that the sanctions have not deterred anything, I guess the administration changes around the messaging. And as the president said yesterday, sanctions were never meant to deter anything. Wow, interesting game. Something more that came out at the White House. Peter Alexander is a member of the NBC News, and Peter Alexander was questioning the president about more sanctions.
You detailed some severe and swift new sanctions today and said the impact it will have over time. But given the full-scale invasion, given that you're not pursuing disconnecting Russia from what's called SWIFT, the international banking system, or other sanctions at your disposal, respectfully, sir, what more are you waiting for?
Specifically, with the sanctions we've imposed exceed SWIFT. The sanctions we imposed exceed anything that's ever been done. The sanctions we imposed have generated two-thirds of the world joining us. They are profound sanctions. Let's have a conversation in another month or so to see if they're working.
Let's have a conversation in another month or so. That's the third time this morning that we played the president in a different clip talking about waiting a month to see if it works out. Well, tell the Ukrainian people that, and tell President Zelensky that. They did have a phone call yesterday, and which President Zelensky requested more assistance. The Russians have been sort of surprised. Things are moving much slower than they expected. Reports are that Vladimir Putin is even more intense and has been a little off the rails in some of his speeches. A lot of criticism about his tone and content. He has not been measured over the past several days. You know, the Anonymous Hackers group, you've seen them with the mask. The group is called Anonymous. It is a group of unidentified hackers around the globe. They have declared war on President Putin and Russia. So we'll see what the global hacking network can do to impact Russia. Delta Airlines has canceled its code share with Aeroflot, the Russian airline, and the United Kingdom has barred Aeroflot from British airspace. So there are a number of different sanctions, a number of different things beginning to impact the Russians, a number of sports competitions being canceled that involved Russia or were to be held in Russia. So the world is reacting. We're going to be talking more about this later on this morning with K.T. McFarland and, of course, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, as we mentioned earlier. And Jim Trustee is going to join us. Of course, he is our legal expert, because there is other news to talk about this week and this morning. Of course, you may have heard by now that President Biden did name his pick for the vacancy on the Supreme Court, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Jim Trustee has actually held a case in front of Judge Jackson, so we're going to get Jim's reaction to his personal interaction with the new Supreme Court nominee. Not sure if you heard about this one or not, but the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. has funding now. If you are a prosecutor, they have 20 positions open. It's a two-year position. What's it for? To prosecute capital breach suspects, those at the Capitol in the riot on January 6th. And Jim Trustee has some opinions on that. And you may have heard that the lawsuit that's been filed in Manhattan against President Trump, the investigation into his finances, is hitting a snag, and two of the prosecutors resigned this week. We'll get into that with Jim Trustee as well this morning. Cheryl Atkison will join us. She's got a read on Ukraine and also a very interesting story on 5G. You've heard about the new technology, the smartphone wireless technology, 5G, that's supposed to make everything so much faster. Well, it made the airlines very upset to the extent that they threatened not to fly within range of those 5G towers. Big controversy. We'll talk about that with Cheryl Atkison this morning. Jennifer Harper's coming up next, and she's got a read on CPAC, which is going on, and also some of the latest poll numbers about how Americans are feeling about Ukraine and our involvement in Ukraine. And that is all coming up on the Saturday Morning Update, along with John Gizzi. And we're going to talk with John about the Supreme Court nomination. A key Republican senator resigning somewhat abruptly. We'll find out who that was coming up around 7:06 this morning. And also, when we talk with John, we'll get his read on Vladimir Putin. And John has some very deep contacts in Europe, including members of the Ukrainian parliament. So we're going to get a very interesting perspective from John Gizzi on the Ukrainian people coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. So plenty to cover. Thank you for being with us on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
And in the news at this hour, invading Russian forces closing in on the Ukraine capital, the city government warning of street fighting and urging residents to stay inside and take cover. President Volodymyr Zelensky is calling on Ukrainians to, quote, stand firm in a fight for the future of their country. The Americans have offered to help him evacuate, but he has refused. U.S. defense officials believing the Russian offensive has encountered considerable resistance and is proceeding slower than Moscow had envisioned. A steady snow that started in the pre-dawn hours brought nearly a foot of accumulation in some areas of the U.S. northeast by the time it wound down late in the day yesterday. Other spots contended with a sloppy mix of sleet and ice in the northeast. Baseball players and owners took a first step towards salvaging opening day. They are nearing an agreement on an amateur draft lottery during lockout negotiations. It's included a surprise one-on-one meeting between the commissioner, Rob Manfred, and the union head, Tony Clark. The agreement on the draft not complete, the talks gaining momentum for the first time as MLB's end-of-Monday deadline approached for a deal that would preserve opening day on March 31st and a full 162-game schedule. It's 6:33. Al BD is in the WML Traffic Center this morning.
Good morning. On the Beltway in Virginia and in Maryland, no delays on the inner loop and out of the outer loop. In Maryland on 270, local lanes northbound in Rockville, all the lanes are blocked for police investigation at West Montgomery Avenue. In Fairfax County on 66 eastbound of Manassas, there is construction. Only one lane is getting by between Sudley Road and the car rest area. In westbound 66 in Centerville, there is construction with one lane getting by between the Fairfax County Parkway and 28. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A cool start to your weekend. Clouds this morning should give way to some sunshine. Temperatures will only work their way in the low to mid-40s, so definitely a cooler than average day. Average this time of year is about 51. Overnight, our winds will go southerly so that tomorrow temperatures will rebound back into the mid-50s, so a nice, pleasant end of the weekend with milder conditions and good sunshine. Another push of some cooler air takes us back into the lower 40s as we kickstart the new work week. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
30 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:34 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper is with us every week. She keeps a pulse on what's going on. Polls, what's going on in the media, how the American public is feeling about things. And, of course, she writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Jennifer, good to have you with us.
Well, good morning, Rick.
Ukraine dominating the news this week. Tragic when you see what's happening there. You see what the Russians are doing. How is the American public taking this?
Well, you know, it's a very emotionally, practically, politically, everything. It's a very complicated situation. And, of course, the pollsters have been at work on this. Some of these polls are pretty significant. And, actually, I have one here for you from the Associated Press. And this is kind of an uncomfortable poll during a very troubled times. But here's what the AP says in their new report. There's little support among Americans for a major U.S. role in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. And again, this is according to a new poll. And, you know, even if we have huge headlines about war breaking out and so forth and so on, the bottom line on that is we'll have a lot of fallout here. I think a lot of people are worried about gas prices going up and everything else that the media has warned them about. But anyway, according to this poll, again, just 26% say the U.S. should have a major role in the conflict, according to the Associated Press poll here. 52% say, yeah, minor role would be okay. 20% want no role at all in this conflict. And this is a recent poll, February 18 through 21, so it's pretty current. And a little analysis from our friends at AP. They say the findings are a reminder for Biden and fellow Democrats that while the crisis may consume Washington in the coming months, pocketbook issues are likely to be a bigger priority for voters heading into the midterm elections. Because as you and I know, and our listeners, the midterm elections are right around the corner. And now we're going to move on really quickly to a Gallup poll. And this does not bode well for President Biden either. And according to the Gallup poll, barely one-third of Americans approve of the way President Biden is handling the threat of the Russian invasion and everything that's going with it. And they found that only 36% of Americans back the president's response so far to the situation in Russia. 55% are disapproving here, Rick. And kind of when asked separately about the broader threat of the Russians' military power and what that poses to U.S. interests overseas and elsewhere, 59% consider that to be a critical threat. And this is up from 44% a year ago, and it is the highest that Gallup has recorded since the item was first asked way back in 2004. So two polls kind of gauging what's going on out there.
Well, typically in a situation like this, there will be documentaries. But in this situation, I was a little bit surprised to see who the documentarian would be.
Yeah, well, this is a different side to what's going on way overseas. And according to both Newsweek and the New York Post, they have reported that Oscar-winning actor Sean Penn has arrived in Ukraine this week because he wants to film a documentary on the whole situation. He says he's already spoken to the nation's deputy prime minister, military representatives, et cetera, and attended an official briefing. And this news coverage, interesting as it is, they even have a picture of Mr. Penn, and he's sitting there in some kind of an office situation. And according to the New York Post, they say, wearing sunglasses and a bomber jacket, a haggard-looking Penn appeared to be listening closely to the briefing held at the president's office, although it wasn't clear if he speaks Ukrainian. So that's your Sean Penn report for today.
CPAC underway in Orlando, the Conservative Political Action Conference annual event. And what's on the agenda today?
Well, it's been a very good visit down there so far. We've got a couple people from the Times down there, and a lot of the press coverage that's come out on CPAC, and there hasn't been very much, but some of it's been pretty snarky. For example, the New York Times referred to CPAC as the bacchanal of right-wing pageantry, passion, and grievance. And Rolling Stone said that Charlie Kirk barely outduels Ted Cruz for the worst CPAC Ukraine take. It's a race to the bottom for Republicans and conservatives. But all that aside, it's been a great event so far. And if you have not been keeping up, you still got today and part of tomorrow to look in on what's going on. Just today, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to be appearing on a panel today called They Can't Shut Us Up. That is at 11:15 a.m. in a couple of hours. Former Deputy National Security Advisor and our friend KT McFarland. She's going to be in a conversation with Senator Bill Hagerty of Tennessee at 12:30. Senator Rick Scott of Florida is going to speak at 1:50. Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana at 3:30. And the big finale, President Trump is going to step up to the podium at 7 p.m. If you want to see this kind of up close and impersonal, you can see it live streamed at CPAC.org. CPAC.org, very easy. And also C-SPAN is covering all of this as well. So stuff to look forward to at CPAC as it's going into its final day pretty well.
You know, one of the topics for CPAC every year is the crisis at the border. And while, of course, we've seen the border crisis with Ukraine, things haven't changed on our southern border.
No, they have not. And I do try to cover this as much as I can. I care about what's going on down there. But we've got a new report here from the Center for Immigration Studies. This is a very smart research group out there. And they say that the nation is now undergoing historic growth, and they have analyzed the U.S. Census Bureau's monthly household survey for January to reveal that the total immigrant population, both legal and illegal, grew by 1.6 million people in the last year. And the population has hit 46.6 million in January. This is the highest number ever in American history, according to the Center for Immigration Studies. They say the enormous number of people now settling in the country reflects both our permissive legal immigration system and the decision not to control illegal immigration. Unfortunately, our national leaders seldom, if ever, ask the most important question. Is this historic growth in the interest of the American people? That's coming from Steve Camerata. He's the center's director for research. He co-authored this report, and he found that immigrants now make up 14.2% of the total American population. This is the highest percentage in 112 years. If present trends continue, the immigrant share is likely to surpass the all-time highs reached in 1890, when it was 14.8%, and 1910, when it was 14.7%. And this is going to happen in the next few years, according to the analysis prediction. So that's your latest on borders kind of all over the place. Again, this is coming from the Center for Immigration Studies.
Jen Psaki, of course, the White House press secretary. We've watched her for the past year at the White House. She is leaving, and there's a lot of speculation as to where she will end up, which cable network she'll end up in, and headed to greener pastures, and I would imagine a little more green than she's making at the White House.
Well, you know, Rick, White House press secretary Jen Psaki is normally dealing with all of our newsmakers and news coverers, and now she's kind of a news item herself. And, of course, the buzz out there has been that she is possibly going to be a replacement for outgoing MSNBC host Rachel Maddow. And there's been a lot of reports coming from National Review, New York Post, and some other news organizations saying that she just might be stepping up to a microphone herself or a camera instead. And this is all coming from an Apple podcast that she was on this week. It was hosted by actor Rob Lowe. And we'll all remember him as a major character in West Wing. You remember that? It was an NBC fictional series. Ran from 1999 to 2006. And Mr. Lowe, he starred in the role of Sam Seaborn, deputy communications director for the fictional President Bartlet. And all of that said, we're all watching what's going to happen. But this is what Mr. Lowe had to say about his time with Ms. Psaki. He said, one real and one fake West Wing. We're trading war stories. So more on that maybe next week.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Keep up with her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. As always, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a good weekend, everybody.
6:44 on the Saturday Morning Update. We'll talk to Jim Trusty, our legal expert, next. But first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Beltway, both in Maryland and in Virginia, you're going to find all lanes clear and at the posted speed limit. In Virginia, on 66 eastbound in Manassas, there is road construction. Roadway is down to one lane between Sudley Road and the car rest area. Westbound 66 in Centerville. There is construction. Only one lane is getting by. Between the Fairfax County Parkway and 28, traffic is jammed from the Fairfax County Parkway. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, no delays being reported northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A cool start to your weekend. Clouds this morning should give way to some sunshine. Temperatures will only work their way in the low to mid-40s, so definitely a cooler than average day. Average this time of year is about 51. Overnight, our winds will go southerly, so that tomorrow, temperatures will rebound back into the mid-50s, so a nice, pleasant end of the weekend. With milder conditions and good sunshine, another push of some cooler air takes us back into the lower 40s as we kickstart the new work week. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraff in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
31 degrees in the nation's capital, 646 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us every week. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. He is the former chief of the organized crime section at the U.S. Department of Justice. And you see him quite often on a number of the different cable news channels. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
President Biden announcing his nominee for the Supreme Court, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Tell us what you know about Judge Jackson.
Yeah, I know a little. She's a double Harvard undergrad, Harvard Law. She was on Harvard Law Review in law school, which is typically a sign that the person's either a really good writer or gets fantastic grades or both. I think she did graduate, I believe, summa cum laude from Harvard. She is a triple clerk, which is a little unusual, too. She was a federal clerk in the district court as well as the U.S. Circuit Court level, and then a clerk for Justice Breyer, which is kind of a added flourish for her name and in this particular nomination taking his seat. She spent about 2.5 years as a public defender, a small stint in private practice, and then about 8 years on the U.S. District Court here in Washington, D.C., before getting appointed last year to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So what's interesting about her, and this is really kind of a growing trend since really Robert Bork, she's only written a handful of opinions as an appellate judge. So, you know, when people say they think they know her judicial philosophy, they're basically getting that from the exception, which is a district court written opinion, which trial judges don't do nearly as often as appellate judges. So we don't really know her judicial philosophy 100%. She's a popular pick with the D.C. bar, I can tell you that. Plenty of attorneys I know have talked her up and say that she's going to be a good justice. I've had a little bit with her. I found her to be very serious, very well prepared, and very, very analytically precise. I mean, she was very sharp on a fairly problematic case that I had in front of her. So I certainly didn't have a bad experience. She seemed to be a good jurist. You know, my own personal druthers, and I've said this before with you, Rick, is I would like to see a Supreme Court justice have some real depth of experience on the appellate level, where they're constantly wrestling with interesting legal issues and academic issues and really deciding what their judicial philosophy is. And so, but now, you know, the trend has been to go younger. A lot of these Supreme Court justice nominees are getting younger. She's 51 years old, which seems really young to me now. Probably wouldn't have a while back. But that puts them on the bench for longer. So that's kind of the political ploy here. You pick a young justice and they're going to be on there for decades instead of years.
I want to turn to a story that maybe a lot of people missed, because it's an easy one to miss, especially with the media the way it is. But it's one that stood out to you. And it involves an announcement by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington saying that they have funding for 20 two-year term positions for prosecutors. Who are they going to prosecute, Jim?
Well, they're apparently going to prosecute anybody who hasn't been prosecuted from the January 6th event on the Capitol Hill. You know, the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office announced this funding for 20 two-year positions. And by the way, when you get into main justice on a two-year position, it almost inevitably turns into a permanent slot. I'll just let you know that now. But this is a year after, more than a year after January 6th, they already have made at least 750 arrests. And this is a U.S. Attorney's Office that's actually one of the biggest in the country. They're, not only are they already very fat in terms of having a lot of prosecutors, but they have massive numbers of volunteers from Maine Justice, from the different sections at Maine Justice, as well as U.S. attorney's offices around the country. So now they have an influx coming of 20 prosecutors doing only these cases. And I think that's an extraordinary moment. It does go under the radar for most folks. I tend to focus on how DOJ is being managed. I freely admit that. But we didn't see that kind of influx of prosecutors after 9/11. To me, this is totally unnecessary. It's a very obsessive sign for this attorney general that they would put that much staffing a year in to the Capitol Hill riot.
At least 750 arrests. And what are the charges that potentially these 20 new prosecutors would be chasing down at this point? Haven't they gotten the majority of the perpetrators who really caused the damage and attacked the police and caused injuries?
You would think so. I mean, the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office website really devotes its primary attention to this particular event. It has a running tally of arrests and the breakdown of charges. You know, most of the folks are being charged with really a glorified trespassing charge. It's something to do with, you know, protesting without a permit on restricted property. But it's basically trespassing. Some of them are getting charges that are more like breaking and entering for going in. And, of course, anyone who got involved in assaulting a police officer or destroying property has their own sets of charges for that. I mean, the most common charge by far is this unlawful picketing-type charge, which is essentially a trespass. And you have a few on the higher end that either face obstruction of a governmental function, meaning the Electoral College count, or in the case of a handful of defendants, conspiracy to commit sedition. So I don't know why a year in with thousands of hours of videotapes that have been reviewed by assistant U.S. attorneys from all around the country, including the D.C. office itself, why there's a sudden need for 20 more people devoted full-time to this particular mission. I just think it's really strong evidence that the Department of Justice has become incredibly politicized under Garland, that it's civil rights and January 6th prosecutions that really get his attention and get the financial attention of the Department of Justice's resources. And I think we're like, what could they have done if they just took 10 of these AUSAs, 10 of these term positions, and put them in Chicago to do violent crime, firearms, and drug cases? I mean, that's how you make a real difference in the quality of life for so many people that deserve some sort of assistance, not obsessing with January 6th to the point of going after lawful protesters.
Jim, it makes more sense to me to go after trespassing charges instead of going after murder charges against people who are killing innocent children and women and teenagers in Chicago or New York or L.A. I mean, why would you want to do that?
Right. Pick a city. We could probably keep going for a while on that thread. But exactly. It's, you know, when you devote resources to one area, you're depriving it of resources from another area. And there's some really legitimate jobs that DOJ could be doing besides obsessing on January 6th.
Well, here's another one where some attorneys have spent a lot of time chasing down the former president. What's the latest on the investigation in Manhattan?
Yes, so the Manhattan prosecution started under the last district attorney, and it was handed off to the progressive prosecutor Alvin Bragg. And this week he watched the two senior assistant district attorneys assigned to the Trump investigation resign. And now he's publicly saying that he's not sure this case is really going anywhere. Now, remember, these are the prosecutors that succeeded in litigating the efforts to get Trump's tax returns. Now they've gone over a month without putting any witnesses in grand jury. And so Bragg felt compelled to at least suggest to the public that maybe it's not going anywhere. And to me, there's a much broader issue that you and I have talked about from time to time, Rick, about prosecutorial ethics. And I don't know what it is about New York, what's in the water up there, or how Donald Trump manages to get under their skin so completely. But these prosecutors, whether it's Bragg or Letitia James as the attorney general or the former DA in Manhattan, they all feel obliged to update the world about their investigations into Donald Trump or his organizations. And, of course, it's lapped up by the media because it makes Trump look bad. But this is exactly why prosecutors shouldn't be political hacks. They're ethically bound to do their talking in court, not to go out and talk about pending investigations, because the investigation itself is viewed really as an accusation. This can have powerful effects on people's lives. And I don't even mean just politically. I mean personally. Being under the gun of an investigation, particularly if it's not going to go anywhere, is an incredibly stressful time. So, you know, what happens in a situation like this if there's no conviction, there's no acquittal at trial, or not even a criminal charge that gets dismissed? Well, to me, it goes back to Reagan's labor secretary when he was indicted in New York, Donovan. And his famous line after his acquittal at trial was, which office do I go to get my reputation back?
Ooh.
You know, making the point that it's a hollow victory to go through accusations that are never actually proven. I think it's a hundredfold worse when the case doesn't even go to trial, but they drag you through the mud for years under the watchful eye of a friendly media. So, you know, my point on all this is not to predict what's going to happen with Trump's case in Manhattan, but just to remind, you know, our listeners that it's really fundamentally unfair of prosecutors to announce that they're targeting someone or to give progress reports like Letitia James has been doing. Now, if they find themselves litigating pretrial issues, like they're fighting over a subpoena or there's an opinion that has to be delivered by the court about a conflict of interest, then sure, these investigations will break the surface a little bit with their pleadings. But otherwise, the fact of an investigation should be a secret. So I'd really love to see the misconduct by high-profile prosecutors ended, and I'm just not sure it's going to end anytime soon from what we're seeing.
Jim, you had another story on unfair accusations.
Oh, this is a big one, literally a big one. It's a Project Innocence story out of Lake Tahoe where Frank the Tank has been accused of numerous break-ins. They say Frank is responsible for as many as 500 break-ins in the Lake Tahoe region. Frank the Tank is rather portly at 500 pounds, and probably because he's really heavy and also really hairy, he left DNA behind at these various scenes. Well, somehow the investigation turned to DNA, and they've exonerated him from many of these break-ins, maybe not all, as some of the DNA clearly came from other black bears, not just Frank the Tank. So, you know, I personally think from the surveillance video, Frank is a very handsome criminal. I'd love to represent him, and I'm worried that if he doesn't be careful, he's going to end up having a very grisly end.
Ooh, I've heard about those black bears in the Tahoe region. Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Jim. You can follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer.
Thanks, Rick.
I guess we'll grin and bear that one. It is 6:57. We've got 7 o'clock news coming up with Heather Curtis, and then we are back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkinson, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and K.T. McFarland is at CPAC this morning.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.